This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. Each year in early February, hundreds of school kids and their adult mentors descend upon a former farm in the Tarbu Valley, armed with digging implements and rubber boots to take part in one of the most ambitious stream restoration and reforestation projects in the state. KPTZ Compass covered the Tarbu Plantathon back in 2015, and as this year's Plantathon is scheduled for this Saturday, the 3rd of February, we thought this would be a good time to reprise that show. So now, let's go inside the Compass.
I'd also love for the school coordinators to please take two or three big steps into the center. Lisa, Jesse, Kit, Susan, who else? Holly, are you here, Holly? Jack, Cecilia, Lois, and Laura. Can you guys come on in? Get in here.
Northwest Watershed Institute Stewardship Director Jude Rubin had a very long list of people to thank as some 200 volunteers stood in a circle under a cloudy sky outside the big old Yar family farm barn at the kickoff of the 10th annual Plantathon, a Tarbu Creek restoration project Rubin and her husband, NWI Director Peter Bales, launched a decade ago in an effort to save vanishing salmon runs on the stream. It was Rubin who came up with the idea years ago to involve local schools with the restoration effort in a sponsorship scheme that would also benefit the schools, which this year included Port Townsend High School, the Ocean Program, the Chimicum Pie Program, Jefferson Community School, and Swan School. But Rubin credits her friend Anna Harms with coming up with the idea of selling the tree sponsorship greeting cards created by well-known local artists that have become the signature fundraising tool of the project. This year's card, titled Infinite Momentum, is by Port Townsend artist Jesse Joshua Watson. I got Rubin to spare me a few minutes of her time in the busy weeks leading up to the Plantathon. So what gave you the idea for the Plantathon in the first place?
It was born of two different needs that kind of collided in the middle of the night. The first was that we were looking for a school for our daughter, and I happened to attend a fundraising meeting at OPEPO, and this was in 2004, there were hard cuts to public education, and there was a real air of desperation around raising money for things like librarians and basic needs. And then on the other hand, Peter and I had been doing restoration work for quite a while and trying to involve volunteers in the tree planting. And as he said, the same three guys always showed up. And after attending that fundraising meeting, I kind of woke up in the middle of the night and thought, well, if they can sell magazines and they can sell cookie dough, they can sell the planting of trees. And I knew a lot of the parents in the program, and I knew that that would be aligned with their curriculum and with their values. And so I went and I proposed it, and they gave me the thumbs up.
Now, was this prior to the Institute having the farm?
It was just after we obtained the Yar farm. And so there was a huge amount of planting to do on that farm. In fact, we didn't even get around to planting that until the third year of the Plantathon. But I'll just go back to the fundraising piece for a second. When I proposed the fundraising model at OPEPO, Anna Harms took me out afterward. She took me aside and she said, "Love the trees. Love the idea. Your fundraising idea stinks, you know." And she stared me down and she said, "Here's how it's going to go. One tree equals one card equals $5. We'll sell it. We'll get the money." And she sort of put her hand on her hips and she looked at me and she said, "We're not going back." Like, they're not going back to collect the money afterward as they did with other kinds of, you know. And I said, "Terrific, that's a much better model." So that's basically how it stayed over the years, is that NWI does all the technical work and the schools do the fundraising piece. So
maybe you could describe a little bit the growth of the project over the years.
Well, we started off pretty big. We started out with 2,000 trees and two schools. And I had come from being mentored in Portland by a woman named Diane Rowley, who believed that to build the will of small children was really beneficial to work together through very difficult projects, to have adults involved in doing difficult things and figuring them out together. So immediately I proposed this huge project of 2,000 trees, and Betsy Carlson from Swan School just looked at me. She didn't even blink. She said, okay. So it started pretty big, because that's what's needed on the landscape. But it did grow. In fact, about 4 years ago, it grew to 5,000 trees and 5 schools. And we ended up having 2 weekends instead of one. But we found that was too much. It got too big. So we've pulled it back to 1 weekend now with 3,000 trees. That seems to be a good scale for our community.
Preparations for the plantathon start many weeks in advance. I went down to the site of the old Yar farm off of Daybob Road one Wednesday in January to see how those preparations were going. The farm is easily recognizable from the road for all of the tall snags that dot a valley that otherwise is mostly open, although there are many stands of much smaller trees from earlier restoration efforts. These large snags did not grow there, but were placed there by NWI workers to provide wildlife habitat. Pulling in by the barn, I found a half dozen young Northwest Watershed Institute employees bustling about tending to hundreds of saplings of various species, some in pots, many bare root, when a pickup truck driven by NWI Director Peter Bales pulled up with a heaping new load of bare root saplings wrapped in plastic.
This is our tree delivery from the WACD nursery. So we got Sitka spruce and a bunch of crab apple and nine bark and a couple thousand trees. This is about less than half of our plants that we're going to plant. The others are ones that we gather. They're either stakes. You can see the stakes over there in the...
Those are living stakes.
Yeah, live stakes, willow and nine bark. And they were gathered from the watershed. And then in here you see a bunch of potted plants. And these are leftovers from last year, or ones that we, what we call pull-ups, where we pull up from one of our board members has a backyard that just gets naturally seeded in with a ton of these little Douglas firs you see here and cedars. So every year we pull up plants and pot them up for the next year.
The crew unloaded the truck and immediately set to work laying the new arrivals on their sides beside an enormous pile of composted soil, swiftly covering the bare roots to keep them moist until planting day, which was still a couple of weeks away.
So this is where we heal in the plants to just let them sit until we're ready to plant them.
Once the new saplings were all squared away, Bales took me on a tour of the target areas for this year's plantathon. We started out by crossing a bridge across a tributary to Tarboo Creek.
Now here's Yar Creek. Yar Creek flows in the winter only, but it's a really important little coho spawning stream. Coho come up here, in a good year you'll see fish every 20 feet spawning all through this section. And then the young fish that hatch out have to get out of this creek and move down to the main stem before it dries up. It generally dries up by May or June. Okay, so here's a plantathon from maybe 6 or 7 years ago. You can see how big the trees are. And as they grow, they shade out the weeds. So that's kind of the long-term strategy, is you've got to get some conifers growing to shade out some of the invasive species. You walk around. Watch out, this is slippery.
On the other side of Yar Creek, the ground grew marshy, and although the crews had prepared for the plantathon by laying down plank walkways, I quickly realized my low-ankled shoes were not sufficient to what lay ahead. As we headed back to the barn, Bales told me the history of the farm.
This was homesteaded back in the late 1800s, and cleared of trees mainly for a dairy farm. And it was a pretty active dairy, I think, until the 1940s. And then after World War II, Danny Yar took over a lot of the management of the farm. And then it kind of sat somewhat idle through the 80s and 90s. He leased it out a little bit, but by the time we met him, he was in his 90s, and he's lived in Port Hadlock. And we bought the farm from him, I think it was 2005.
The Institute bought the farm.
Yeah. And Danny has been out here. We came out here, I love to show him around and show him what we're doing, and he came out on one of our plantathons, or maybe it was a couple, and planted trees.
Oh, really?
In his 90s.
Wow.
Yeah. And one time after we'd finished meandering one of the streams out there, it had been a straight ditch going down to the road, and we put in a nice meandering pattern. We came down with him, and his brother was in town, and looked at it. And he said, "That looks pretty good. That looks just where it used to be before we put it in a ditch." So we knew we must be doing something right there.
Before we parted that day, I asked Bales how he measured success.
Well, the real test is if there's any fish that come back. So there's coho and chum salmon, and there used to be steelhead in this creek. We think they're extinct. We haven't seen any for... We've never seen steelhead in here, although you talked to all the old timers and there was a pretty strong steelhead run in the creek.
But for you, never started when?
2000. Well, I've been working here for 20 years on and off because I started working for the tribes 20 years ago doing spawning surveys in Tarbu Creek. And the coho run is definitely getting better, although we've had some real poor years as well. And part of it is, it's not just what happens with the habitat in the creek, it's all of what happens when they get out to the ocean. The natural production of the ocean varies from year to year, so the survival of the fish can go way up and down. And then on top of that, you've got the fishing pressure, commercial, recreational, tribal fisheries. And with a small run like this, you might have, in a good year, 500 or 1,000 coho that could come up and spawn in Tarbu Creek. But to commercial fishermen or tribal fishermen, catching 500 or 1,000 coho is doesn't take that long.
I next returned to the Tarbu Wildlife Preserve 1 week before the scheduled date of the planathon to observe the training session for planathon team leaders. When I arrived, there were already at least 50 people milling around in front of the barn, many greeting each other like long-lost friends.
Does anybody need to sign in? Does everybody grab a name tag? Okay, hey, Jack.
Reuben soon gathered the crowd, which included some 24 teen crew leaders from three local high schools, along with 10 adult mentors, into a circle for introductions and to explain the plan for the day.
So excited to see everybody here. A lot of you have returned from last year or the year before or many, many years. And so there's a lot of experience here in this circle. And some of you are new. And the reason that we ask everyone to come every year is because this training is really a sharing of information. I guess before we get started, before we do introductions, I just want to thank you for your dedication. You personally don't have to know everything. That's why we work in groups. It doesn't matter who you are or what gifts you have. All I ask is that whatever gifts you have, bring them forward. All right, the goals of today, we're going to get everybody familiar with the site and with three planting techniques. We're going to look at Tarbu Creek and the ecology. We're going to spend some time doing plant identification, and I got a couple of games for you guys this year, so it won't be quite as tedious. We're going to go over emergency and safety protocols. Before we start that, I would love for everybody to step forward, take a step forward, and introduce yourself and say maybe where you're from. And if you would like to share why you've come today, that's great. It's totally optional. Okay?
I'm Elf. I'm from the Chimicum Pie Program, and I'm here because I have a very strong interest in ecology.
I'm Onda. I'm from the Pie Program, and I'm here for the salmon and the environment.
Jake Brady from Students for Sustainability, here to help out wherever I can.
I'm Jack Picorni, and I'm from SFS. I'm here for our trees and our future.
Once the introductions were over, which, with 50 people, took quite a bit of time, Bales showed a map of the 10 zones that had been laid out for planting, and then, with Bales in the lead, the whole crew went on a tour of the valley bottom to see where the teams would be working the following week. After my last experience, this time I came equipped with high-topped rubber boots, which proved wise.
This area here with Douglas fir and grand fir and spruce, and the trees are growing really well. The soil is nice and dry, and the areas we're going to be planting this year are the really challenging, difficult areas where the soils are super wet and they've got lots of reed canary grass. And of course, the reason you put the tree protectors on is because the mice come in and try and girdle the tree around the bottom and will kill the tree that way. So let's... Okay, does everybody know what this is?
Canary reed grass.
Reed canary grass, yes. Reed canary grass, this is an invasive grass that takes over very wet soils. You can see how wet it is in here. And it's hard to get anything to grow in here without using some special techniques. And last year, for the first time in a plantathon, we tried some new things and they worked really well. Here's a hollow log planter where you put...
come check this out, you guys.
Just to show you quickly, here's a spruce and a cedar planted in this hollow log with a bunch of dirt and wood chip in the top of it. And we had about 95% survival on all these last year. It was just wonderful. The other one is the willow, what we call the willow cages or willow plantings, where you put cardboard down and then put willow stakes through. And that keeps the reed canary grass down for a year or two until the willow grows up and shades out the reed canary grass.
So this is the result of what happened. What do you guys think of the reed canary grass over here?
That's amazing that worked so well.
It worked really well. There are a couple of little changes about the spacing this year, but basically we're going to be doing a lot more of this.
You can see they're, you know, pretty 10, 12 feet high after just 1 year, and this will be a big giant willow grove right here by this summer. They grow really fast. So let's keep going to the next site. But before you go, just look around. You can see the flagging. And when we talk about techniques, we'll talk about what the flagging means. But each of those is either a willow, a new willow grove, or there's going to be more planter boxes out here too. So let's talk about the ecology of this area a little bit. This is extremely wet ground. And you see this spruce right here? That's probably over 10 years old, but it's not growing very well because it's so wet. It's almost like a bog conditions. So the types of plants we're going to plant in these super wet areas are plants that like it even wetter than spruce. A lot of shrubs like ninebark and spirea and willow and things like that. More of a shrub scrub wetland type environment. Closer to the creek, we re-meandered the creek back in 2007, and it was a straight ditch that went right down for a cow pasture. And it was re-meandered, and it made some beautiful wetlands, but also reed canary grass really likes those wet areas. So the reed canary grass has really come into different areas. So we're trying to replace that with more native plantings. When you have a lot of shrubs and trees, it provides a lot of organic matter that falls in the creek to support the food chain of the creek and all the little insects that eat that and support the salmon. And also there's one other thing which is important. It's kind of funny though. We like the trees because they get cut down by the beaver. And the beaver make beaver dams. And beaver dams are a really great habitat for juvenile salmon. These salmon that have to live in the creek for a year, the baby coho, they like slow water areas. And there's a beaver pond right up here. You can see all that slow water along the edge of the flooded areas. So they're using a lot of our cuttings to make their dams. So we're trying to stay ahead of the beaver, make sure there's enough food for them, but also something to restore the creek, which is why we cage some of the willows so that the beaver don't eat them right away. They grow into a big giant grove and then they can start chewing on them.
Like hiding the food in the back of the cabinet, right?
Yeah. Like having teenagers in your house and they're always emptying the refrigerator.
After the tour, the crew returned to the barn to play some plant identification games, and then, after having a snack, they split up into teams and went out to spend the rest of the day readying their assigned zones and practicing their planting techniques. At the end of the day, all seemed good and ready for the following Saturday, when buses and carpools of children and adults from 5 different schools were scheduled to come out and plant those 3,000 trees and shrubs. But then, midweek, it started to rain. And it didn't stop. Looking at the weather forecast, Reuben and Bales made a decision on Thursday morning. Flooding was predicted, and the Tarbu Valley was already sodden. They pulled the plug and postponed the plantathon for a week. Reuben later reported that the effort had required about 6 hours on the phone. And it was a good thing they did. The forecast proved accurate. The High Olympics received a record 9 inches of rain Thursday and Friday, and not only did Tarbu Creek flood, but so did the Duckabush and Dosawallops rivers near Brennan, causing extensive damage and requiring at least one family to be rescued by a swift water rescue team. I went down to Brennan to cover that story, and on the way I stopped by the farm to see how bad the Tarbu flooding was. I found the plank bridge we had used to cross the creek to the planting area Bales had dubbed the Far East under several inches of water, with water flowing fairly briskly through the reed canary grass in areas that had been relatively dry the week before. The rain continued for a few more days, although at a slower pace, but by midweek the water began to subside. Reuben and Bales decided to hold the course, and on Saturday morning, the trained team leaders who would be running the event showed up early as scheduled to rehearse their roles, collect their saplings and stakes, and to inspect their assigned zones before the school buses showed up at 9:30.
Zone 6.
Oh, my, look at
guys,
all this. We're going to be busy.
Okay, zone 7.
So how about if you guys do the cages and I'll do the singletons and the nursery planners?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, good. And we're over here. We're just across. This is that little, you know, that bridge?
Yeah.
Those across? So we're across this little slippery bridge. We got to watch our crew on that. One big thing is going to be a brigade of people to do the soil,
mm-hmm.
to carry the soil buckets.
Yeah.
So we'll just assign people. I think some kids would really enjoy that. And then, so we've got safety. And who, do either of you want to talk about, just for a minute, about the ecology? I would love it if it could be one of you guys.
I'm not too well-versed. I know the basics of why the creek is there and salmon habitat and such.
I can try, but yeah.
It would be great if you want to give it a try. I would love it. And I'll back you up.
Okay.
Okay?
How's
that sound? Okay.
All right, meet back here at 9:40, please.
Okay, so this is a willow cage here.
Yeah.
Right? And this is the center.
Right, oh, that one?
That's a willow cage.
All right, and then there's more down there. There's one more down there.
This is a lot more fun and scary than I expected.
You weren't expecting to be wading around in several inches of water?
Well, my dad said it was going to be pretty muddy. I didn't expect us to going through an almost non-traily area, but it's actually quite fun.
And more like the loopy.
Yeah.
I think zone 9 is beyond us. So we have the creek, these blue flags, and this run, and that's our area.
Alright.
It's 9:22, so we're gonna head back, because I think people are showing up at 9:40.
Guys, don't take off yet. We're gonna load the table, Lisa, and get the food out, okay? Hold up.
All right, so we set up the tables.
Yes. So
yeah, let me throw this in.
And Pandamore gave me a lot of bread. These are all full.
So your name is?
Russ Yates.
And you are the?
The head of school at Swan School in Port Townsend.
Tell me about what this has meant to the Swan School.
Oh, it's huge because it's a great way for the kids to feel a part of the community. So as a community service piece, it also helps with a little bit of fundraising. It is a community building piece, and science is involved with it. Whenever we have taken our kids anywhere on field trips, the other instructors are always so impressed with how much they know about salmon habitat and healthy ecosystems, and a lot of that stems from here. It takes what they've learned in the classroom, and it brings it to real life. So it's all of those things mixed together.
Are you staying the whole day?
Yes, I'm staying the whole day.
Yay!
So how old are you?
11.
11. What's your name?
Marcella.
So you started doing it when you were how old, do you think?
I don't quite remember. I was 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time,
kindergarten, actually.
I was in kindergarten.
Were you there too?
Kindergarten.
Yes, I was. I have been doing it since I was in preschool. So.
What's your name?
Grace. I'm 11 too.
So if you've been doing it for that long, there must be trees out there that you remember planting yourself.
Lots of them. I've planted a lot that are right over there. Like, you can't see them because of the trees, but they're really tall right now.
So you've visited them again?
Yes, we have. We've planted trees in the same area in a while.
And so they've survived then?
Yes, they have survived, and they're really tall for the trees. And that's next to a river, so it gets flooded over and it gets really wet. And they still survive, so it's really fun.
Now, did you notice any that you planted that
didn't survive?
There were a few over next to the river that drowned and fell into the river. But it's partially good because the salmon will lay their eggs and stuff, and it'll make more salmon.
Happy face. Okay, circle up. Welcome to the 10th annual Plantathon. We're really honored to have everybody here today. Before we get started, Gene Jones and Marilyn Jones are here from the Tsklallam and the Suquamish tribes this morning to bless us with a welcome and a song. Gene's been on the board of Northwest Watershed Institute since day one, and we're really, really happy that you're here. Thank you.
I too would like to thank each one of you that came out today. It's really exciting to see such a fine group of people, the big ones and the little ones. It's good to see the little ones out here. It's really important that we take care of our environment, and the tree planting is part of helping to keep our waterways clear and clean. A few years back, Peter asked me to come. I'm the spiritual leader for several tribes. And he asked me to come down and bless this stream. And I was standing there praying. I had my hands out like this, and I was praying for the stream. And as I stood there praying, there was three or four salmon come swimming up the stream. And the people that was there said, "Wow, it's a powerful prayer." And it wasn't my prayer at all. It was all the work and everybody done. And you people are part of the whole program. And you're helping us to make our waterways healthier for our salmon people that are coming, returning back. And I can't tell you how thankful I am. So I'll start off with the song, and that'll be my part.
This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. This week's Compass originally aired on February 16, 2015, and was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. and repeats the following Saturday at noon. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.